We are going to talk about roundabouts this hour and whether they really work, whether they are really safer, more efficient, or not. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, April 14th. So what do you think? Do you love or hate roundabouts? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We have two guests with us who know about roundabouts. They are with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. We'll talk about the benefits of roundabouts. We'll look at the criticisms of roundabouts. And we'll talk about the future. What's next for roundabouts in Wisconsin? Do you hope there are more or fewer of them? Let us know your thoughts. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us Jerry Zog, the Chief Roadway Standards and Methods Engineer for the Bureau of Project Development at the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Joy.
And Paul Vraney is also with us, a Roadway Design Standards Engineer for the DOT. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks to both of you for being with us. Let's start first with the history of roundabouts in Wisconsin. When did we start building these circular intersections as opposed to that traditional four-way stop or, you know, traffic-lighted intersection, Jerry?
Yeah, Joy, maybe I can just give a little bit of background there. This all started back in the late 90s when Wisconsin was identified as having sort of an above-average intersection crash history. And this was noticed, you know, at the federal level and here in the state as well. And we began looking for alternative intersection treatments that might bring that crash rate down. And primarily we were focused on the severe crashes, you know, the fatal crashes and the severe injury crashes. So that's really kind of what got us started. We actually put our first roundabout on the state trunk highway system, you know, in 2004.
Where was that?
That was at up in the Wisconsin Rapids area, at the intersection of Highway 54 and Gaynor up, and it's a three-legged intersection.
Okay.
but up in Wisconsin Rapids.
Interesting. So in fact, there was a story in USA Today not that long ago, last month, about probably that intersection, because it was a Wisconsin Rapids roundabout, and it was just a newspaper investigation as to whether it was reducing serious crashes. And if I'm remembering correctly, the quantity of crashes was up. There were more fender benders, but they were fender benders. They weren't serious fatal accidents. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's correct, actually, and that has been, you know, our statewide experience is that, and we've been studying the performance of roundabouts pretty regularly, starting with roundabouts that were in service, you know, in 2007, and then again in 2008, and then again in 2009. So we're probably one of the leaders across the country in really continuing to evaluate how they are performing. But you have touched on it, and is that they are showing very good performance when it comes to reduction in fatal and serious injury crashes. The most recent, you know, results that we have show that for fatal and severe injuries, roundabouts have decreased those crashes by about 40%. And that's a very compelling number when we look at other, you know, safety initiatives that we do. And when it comes to fatal and all injury crashes, those are being reduced by about 30%. Again, a very compelling number. When you think about nationally that 21% of all traffic fatalities and roughly 50% of all serious injuries happen at intersections. So if we can make 40% reduction in those crashes, that's a very compelling, you know, statistic.
Yeah.
You have touched on, though, the other thing that we're paying attention to is we are seeing an increase in, you know, in what you correctly refer to, you know, as the fender bender crashes, the low severity crashes. We're continuing to pay a lot of attention to those. as well. And we've got an upcoming study, you know, to focus more on those crashes to get a better sense of what might be happening there. But this sort of a trade-off is not uncommon, you know, with safety initiatives where you focus on the most severe, and you oftentimes can have this trade-off then of a higher frequency of less severe. And a good example of that is just beam guard that we all see along the side of the road. I mean, we put it up at bridges, we put it up at steep slopes to prevent that serious crash, but by the mere fact that it's there, then people hit it, you know, and so you will experience these low severity crashes. But we're not turning a blind eye to these low severity crashes at roundabouts. We're going to continue to do some more study to see if there's anything we can do from a geometric perspective, or if there's sort of human behavior things there that we can tap into.
Interesting. Well, do you decide, and maybe this is one for Paul, to put roundabouts in the intersections that have the most accidents first? Is that how you decide where a roundabout goes?
Well, first, we look at the intersection safety, and we do an evaluation to see if a roundabout would be a good solution for that situation. But it's one of the tools in the toolbox. We also would look at whether signals would work, or if there's alternative intersections, or maybe just keeping a stop control of some kind at this intersection. So it does take an evaluation process, and we call it as the ICE, or intersection control evaluation, and we go through that process to see whether or not a roundabout would be a good solution. And there are several factors that are evaluated to determine if the roundabout would be a good solution for improving the capacity and the safety of that particular intersection.
And Paul, maybe you can answer this one for me too. I'm from Appleton originally, and I grew up without roundabouts. And now when I go home to visit into the Fox Valley, I visit Oshkosh and Green Bay. They're everywhere. It seems like there's more roundabouts in that part of the state in all of my travels than anywhere else. Am I right, or is that just my false impression?
Joy, that's a great observation. Because I'm from that area too, and there's about 40% of the roundabouts in the Northeast region, which includes the Outagamie and Winnebago County areas, which have Appleton and Oshkosh and Green Bay. Alone with the I-41 project that is going to be wrapping up in Green Bay, there's a total of 41 roundabouts that were constructed with the Oshkosh and Green Bay I-41 project. So, yeah, the 40% of the roundabout number, your recognition of that is on the mark, spot on.
Well, how come? Why is it that there are so many there?
Well, it was an opportunity, certainly, to look at the crashes that we had at existing intersections, and also make improvements with our upcoming project. But also, the roundabouts add a component of safety and capacity. And with the capacity improvements, these are designed to last for a long time. Also, there's a cost savings, in fact, with some of the locations with the roundabouts. And we can save on bridge width at interchanges because the number of lanes that are approaching the roundabouts can be diminished. So there's a savings as well that we found with roundabouts at interchange ramps, for example, that was used for the 41 project.
Right. Well, I'm getting used to them. In the spirit of full disclosure, I'm going to say that I'm not the biggest fan because I'm old and I'm not used to driving them. But I haven't gotten in any accidents, and I know the basics of how to get through a roundabout. I still don't love them because especially if I don't know where I'm going. That's when I don't like them. I'm not familiar with where I'm going in a particular community. Why don't you, maybe Jerry, tell us how should we use a roundabout as a motorist? How do you drive through a roundabout?
Yeah, thanks, Joy. There's really, from the studies that we've done and looking at all of the crash mapping that we've put together, there's really kind of key, if we can get people to maybe remember just three things in terms of, of driving a roundabout, we think it would really kind of serve, them well and everybody else that's going through there at the same time. The first thing is to slow down. You'll see the advisory speed signs as you approach the roundabout. The speeds in the circle itself, are intended to be, less than 20 miles an hour. So you do need to slow down. The second thing is, just like at any other intersection, is pay attention to the advanced either signing or combination of signing and lane marking to get in the correct lane. Again, pretty pretty comparable, you know, to any other intersection, that you need to know where your through lanes are, where your right turn and left turn lanes are. You need to pay attention to those things, too, before you get into the circle. So get in the right lane. And then the third thing is that once you're at the entrance to the circle, is that you have to yield to all the lanes of traffic on your left. So that may be a little counterintuitive. At a typical intersection, oftentimes if the lane closest to you, that right lane, is open, people will pull into that even though there may be traffic in the next lane over. In a roundabout, that's dangerous because somebody could be exiting at the very next leg of the intersection and could be cutting across in front of you. So you need to yield to both lanes or all lanes.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about roundabouts and the future of roundabouts in Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Take it slow, take it slow, take it slow. When we see a roundabout, take it slow. Then we pick the correct lane and take it slow. When we see a car approach, we yield to the left. When we're in that roundabout, we don't pass anybody yet. Take it slow, take it slow, take it slow.
Visit WisconsinRoundabouts.com for more info from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation.
And you can, I think you can see that commercial and get more information about roundabouts posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are talking about roundabouts, the past, the present, and the future of roundabouts. We're welcoming your questions about driving in roundabouts. We're welcoming your views on whether you like them or not. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Any thoughts on how we can make them better? We know already that the roundabout is reducing the number of serious or fatal crashes in Wisconsin, but it is increasing in parts the more minor accidents, the fender benders. How can we reduce those as well? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with two guests from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, Jerry Zog and Paul Vraney. And we have full lines, so I think I'm just going to go right to the phones, as one of our callers is a truck driver, Dennis in Appleton. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. All in all, I think roundabouts are a good idea. There is a small or short learning curve for where they're installed. As a driver, a tractor trailer driver, I do like the single lane roundabouts better, because the double lane, you always got somebody trying to pass you or trying to sneak ahead of you, which is very, very dangerous. But that would be the fourth thing I would add. Entering a roundabout, please do not try to pass a tractor trailer.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, and maybe Jerry or Paul can answer this, didn't state law change recently to make sure that we yield to semis or trucks in all situations?
Yes, it has actually. Around the beginning of February, there was a state law that was passed. If two vehicles, one a smaller vehicle and a larger vehicle, coming approaching a roundabout at about the same time in the same location, that the smaller vehicle would yield to the larger vehicle as they approach and drive through the roundabout. And there's more specifics in the law, but that's the gist of it, basically, is that there is something on the books now. And the whole idea was that because, you know, as a large vehicle needs to navigate or maneuver through the roundabout, they need more space. And with the tight curvature, there's going to be some movement between lanes. If it's a multi-lane roundabout, the tractor trailer will cross the lane line and enter the adjacent lane. And they need that space, and they need that room. And it'll obviously, like Dennis mentioned, they want to try to avoid, the drivers don't want anybody trying to come alongside, and they want to avoid any kind of incident. So this law is there to protect that and make it safer for not only the truckers but all users for roundabouts.
Let's go to Angelo in Linksville next. Hi, Angelo.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I guess my question was answered a little bit there. Working down in Prairie du Chien, they have three consecutive roundabouts there, and they're multi-laned. And I guess Monday I approached the intersection coming into the roundabout, and I was alongside a semi, and I had to yield to him because, you know, obviously he's going to take up both lanes. And I guess not being around the roundabouts frequently, I wasn't sure of the situation. So, yeah, it was definitely a learning experience.
Yeah. And it's, I suppose it's, that accident might not be one that you want to get into. Any other, I don't know, tips when it comes to sharing the roundabouts with semis?
Yeah, Joy, this is Jerry. I mean, the one thing I'll just draw a comparison to, I think we can all maybe picture even typical intersections, you know, where trucks have to make wide turns, you know, they have to cross into other lanes and sometimes even cross the center line to make right turn at a typical intersection. So I think it's a matter of just trying to be alert, kind of recognize, you know, what's going on, you know, around you and just give that larger vehicle, you know, some room. So the rules between the roundabout and a regular intersection are kind of the same, and this recent legislation, we've had legislation on the books for traditional intersections to yield for a long time, and now we have caught up and we have that in place for roundabouts as well.
Yeah. Let's go next to Helen in Green Bay. Hello, Helen.
Oh, good morning. I love the roundabouts. This is a great program. When I was driving in England last year, they had quite a few roundabouts. Of course, I was on the wrong side of the road, but they used their turn signals. So if they were getting into a roundabout and they were going to turn off on the very first turn, they would have their signal on for that direction. And if they were going to take the second, third, or fourth exit, they would have their turn signal on the other way until they got just in front of it, and then they would switch their turn signal. And let me tell you, for somebody driving on the wrong side of the road, but I was used to roundabouts here, it was so wonderful because I could imagine that this was what they were going to do unless they were not using turn signals, and then, of course, you couldn't tell. But it was excellent.
Hey, I want you, Helen, to take a listen to this scene from National Lampoon's European Vacation and tell me if it sounds familiar.
I guess what we do is just drive around this circle here. It should be the second left exit. There's the hotel. Hey, look, kids! There's Big Ben and there's Parliament!
There it is, there it is, there it is!
I know. I can't seem to get over to the left, honey. I'll try next time. Sorry. We'll get out of this jam in a minute. Kids! Big Ben! Parliament! Again.
Well, you get the picture. Yeah, Helen, was it like that?
Oh, my God, it's hilarious. But you know what I had that was so wonderful? I had my sister-in-law navigating, and so she's talking out loud where I should be and turn your signal on this way and that. So we really had a good system going. that's hilarious.
You know, I like roundabouts when I'm telling my husband where to go and how to try to get out of them. I don't, yeah. But when I'm driving, I don't like them so much. But anyway, I'm glad you called, too, because, Jerry, it seems to me that I've read that roundabout in Wisconsin is different than the roundabout in, or what they call the traffic circle, the huge traffic circle in Europe.
Yeah, there are some differences there, and even within the U.S., when you get out to the East Coast, we have some what we would refer to more as traffic circles, multi-lane, you know, intersections in a circular, you know, configuration that don't have the same, you know, yield and entry processes that we have here in Wisconsin and in a lot of England now too, or a lot of Europe. So there's this, and this kind of does kind of, you know, contribute to some confusion. And you know, the way we talk about it is the modern roundabout. You know, is kind of our distinction between those traffic circles. So yeah, there are some differences, and it's easy to get those mixed up. And the other thing too is sometimes people see those little things put into residential subdivisions that are really kind of traffic calming devices. You'll see something constructed right in the middle of the intersection that kind of force people to drive around it.
Yep.
You know, and some people think those are roundabouts too. So that is a challenge, is trying to keep this stuff straight and know what jargon applies to what.
Yeah, I know that people, snowplow drivers, don't like, I don't think, those traffic calming things. I'm not sure they're wild about roundabouts either, are they?
Well, we when we started, there was some, there was some concerns, and I guess, understandably so. We didn't have any, so snowplow drivers didn't really know what, were appropriate, methods to clean the roundabout. But people caught on to that pretty quickly, and I think we got around, and the counties, took their own initiative, and I don't think there's really any issues with snow plowing roundabouts anymore. It was kind of just an initial thing that we had to get used to.
Yeah, and I drove for the first time, and I was navigating. My husband was driving, I was not, but for the first time I went through I think there were three roundabouts when we got off of Highway 41 in Oshkosh, and this was the first time that I experienced those, and it was almost comical as that National Lampoon case, but we made it. Paul Vraney, help me understand why those three roundabouts right as you get off Highway 41 are good for traffic flow and are safer and all that good stuff.
Yeah, Joy, you're on the mark. I mean, we have several locations. I can think of Oshkosh and Green Bay where we have, in fact, three or four roundabouts in series. And the roundabouts are efficient. I mean, they're able to move traffic, and the queuing or the spillback is fairly minimal when we have multi-lane roundabouts in those situations where you can carry a lot of traffic. So when you have a series like that in close proximity, there's a lot of signage. Certainly a lot of pavement marking to recognize, but they can move traffic. There's less delay, and they're efficient. And that's kind of the one of the advantages when you have, locations that have frontage roads that are close by, interchange. Those are things that, with those roundabout space that closely, they are efficient, and they keep traffic moving.
I'm Joy Cardine, and we are talking about roundabouts in Wisconsin, talking some about the history of roundabouts and why we are seeing more and more of them, and we'll talk more about the future of roundabouts, and we'll welcome your questions and your views. So have you gotten used to driving in roundabouts now? Did you once hate them and now you love them, or haven't you warmed up to them yet? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our conversation prompted in part by a story in USA Today, Wisconsin, Do Roundabouts Work? A case study, which looked into the safety of a roundabout in Wisconsin Rapids. And it found that the severity of crashes decreased at this intersection, but the overall quantity of crashes increased. So more fender benders, but less serious or fatal accidents. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So in my hometown of Appleton, I noticed there's some construction happening right in front of my beloved grade school, Richmond School, John Street, Appleton. And I know that there's going to be a roundabout put there. And I know that some friends and former neighbors are... Some are concerned, saying, boy, this is right in front of a school where kids are walking and kids are riding their bikes. And Paul Vraney, what about the safety of pedestrians and bicyclists in roundabouts?
One of the advantages with roundabouts and with pedestrians and bicyclists is that for pedestrians, it's a short walk to go from the corner to the splitter island or the middle of the roundabout. And there's a safe haven or a refuge in that splitter island. So it's like a two-step maneuver to get across. It's a short distance. The law, the state law, requires the vehicles to yield to the pedestrians. But the advantages of those short distances certainly very, very important as far as overall pedestrian and safety when it comes to the roundabouts and what the roundabouts will provide. And bicyclists also have an opportunity to get off the roadway. They can stay on the roadway, or they can get off by a side path to go around the roundabout and then get back on the roundabout post or departure side of the roundabout. So there's some options for bicyclists as well.
Just to add to that, I mean, from all of the study that we've done, we've had very good statistics for both pedestrian and bicycle safety in roundabouts.
And the bicyclist is supposed to do the, I guess, treat it as though you're a car, you're doing the same, you're yielding to the traffic on the left and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, the bicycle, as Paul was mentioning, the bicycle basically has two choices for the, you know, the savvy, you know, street rider. They can basically take the lane in the roundabout as a car would, or if they're not feeling that comfortable, we have a way for them to, you know, exit before the roundabout starts and then get back on the street, you know, after the roundabout.
Yeah. So how many roundabouts are, I don't know, how many do we have now, and how many you know, are constructed in the state in an average, on average, in a year?
Joy, right now we have in the state about 356 roundabouts, including on the local system. We're probably under-reporting that just a tad, but about 356. And all the 356, we have about 200 on the state highway system throughout the state. So, you know, there's a lot of local roundabouts. In fact, when Jerry talked earlier in 2004 with the Rapids roundabout, actually Brown County was a pioneer in building some of the first roundabouts. They had about a half a dozen roundabouts built starting in 1999. So they've been out there a little bit earlier than the state has built some. So there's a lot of roundabouts on the local system and through cities as well as on the state network, but about 356. And we're building about, on the average, about 25 to 30, give or take, every year at this pace.
Ah, interesting. All right, so the state does some and local governments do some. In fact, Bill Martin's one of my producers was bragging about living and driving in the first roundabout in the state in Brown County, so he wasn't lying.
All right.
Let's go to Tom in Cedarburg next. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Joy. I do see some benefits to them. I didn't before, but after driving them, there's one out by Highway 60 in Kawnee P. Makes sense, makes things safer. I'm wondering when local control will be able to, you know, say that they don't want a roundabout. So.
Oh, all right. So let's say the state thinks a roundabout should go into some local community. Can the local community say no? Tom is asking, Jerry?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and you know, that's we've had some some legislation introduced in that regard as well. I guess from our perspective, I mean, we certainly understand the need for local input on all those kinds of decisions. We are already, if you want to think about it from a legal perspective, there are already statutes on the books that require us to do, you know, public involvement, coordination with local officials, and we have quite an extensive program to do that. So, you know, from our perspective, we start engaging local officials in direct meetings, go out to public informational meetings to try to get a gauge, you know, of what, you know, the community is thinking. But the one thing I want to add to that is that from studies that have been done across the country, it is not uncommon for locations where roundabouts are being proposed for people to have a fair amount of anxiety about them before they're put in. So oftentimes when we're in a situation like that, we'll tell communities, look, you're at the same place that almost everybody else is that's getting their first roundabout. But we also want to tell you that those public opinions typically change and change pretty quickly. So within about a year, we can often go from a majority of people either being opposed to them or just being apprehensive about them to a majority of people being positive, you know, about them. So from our perspective, we would hate to see the benefits of a roundabout missed because of short-term, you know, public opinion.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll talk about the future of roundabouts in Wisconsin. Do you want to see more of them? Well, more are on the way. We'll talk a little bit about why that is. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Talking about roundabouts, their safety, their efficiency, and their future. And welcoming your questions and your concerns. Our guests are Jerry Zog. He is Chief Roadway Standards and Methods Engineer for the Bureau of Project Development at the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. And Paul Vraney is a Roadway Design Standards Engineer for the DOT. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside.
We're talking about riding in our automobiles and maneuvering roundabouts in Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with two guests who know their way around a roundabout. We are welcoming your questions about them and your cheers or your concerns about them at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Both of our guests are with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, Jerry Zog and Paul Vraney, our guests. And back to the phones we go. Donna in Wisconsin Rapids is with us now. Hi, Donna.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for your program. I thought it was so funny when I started my commute today. I heard you talking about the first roundabout in Wisconsin Rapids and then how accidents in regular intersections are sometimes very, either hurt really bad or fatal. And it hit home. My husband was involved in a really bad accident in Wisconsin Rapids at an intersection not too far from that roundabout. And years ago, when that first roundabout got in, was in a fender bender in the roundabout. I agree that they're safer. They're a little confusing at first, and that's where the fender bender came from. Someone just basically stopped completely in there, not knowing which way to go, and we bumped into them. But we've also been to England with a really big roundabouts on their interstate system and did kind of that laughing thing where you go around it a couple times trying to figure out which way to get off of them. Doesn't help driving on the wrong side of the road. But I do think they're safer. We had there was a new one put in Plover off of 54, and the whole community was kind of up in arms about it. But now everyone says they love it. It makes it easier and safer when they come through. I'll listen. Thank
you very much, Don. I appreciate that. So we had a family member that was in a serious accident at a traditional intersection, was herself in a minor fender bender at the roundabout, but thinks they're pretty good. Jerry, is that what we're seeing? Is that once we get used to them, we like them?
We have seen that transition happen, yeah. And fortunately, unfortunately, it's a big challenge, as you can imagine, to introduce something like this, you know, to our system and try to educate, you know, the masses, you know, to do it. So we certainly understand that. We certainly, appreciate that it is going to take a little time to get used to these things. But it seems as more and more people do, that the public opinion does change.
Yeah. And I have to admit, mine is changing to some extent. I mentioned earlier that I'm not the biggest fan. I am getting used to them. I do question why we need so many in one spot, or, you know, five or six of them in Little Mount Horeb. And I just kind of wonder why some are where they are. But I am getting used to them. How do we, though, and I don't know, maybe Jerry first or Paul, I'm not sure. How do we reduce the number of fender benders? Now, we talked about that a little bit earlier. That we're seeing an increase in those. Can we decrease those?
Yeah, well, we're certainly wanting to pay as much attention to that as we can. And, you know, you asked me earlier, and I kind of listed those three things that we think would help. You know, people slow down, people be in the correct lane before they get into the roundabout, and then yield to both lanes, you know, in the multi-laners at the circle, at the face of the circle. Those three things will go a long ways because, and I'll mention kind of the middle one on being in the right lane. We're seeing a number of the fender benders occur because people get into the roundabout and they realize they're in the wrong lane. So they're in the circle and they realize they need to make a quick lane change to be able to exit. And that, you know, is a cause for crashes. If people don't yield to both lanes on their left and they pull in when there's a car on the inside lane, that can result in that fender bender of somebody taking the very next exit out. So those three things will go a long way. Beyond that, we're in the process right now of scoping out a study, what we call a road safety analysis, to bring in a broad range of people to look at seven or eight or more roundabouts across the state that seem to be having a little higher number of these low-severity crashes, to meet with people in that area, talk through those situations, to again see if there's anything from a geometric perspective, a signing or a marking perspective, or if there's some additional outreach that we can can do. You played the ad earlier, that 30-second ad, and we're prepared, you know, to do another, you know, broadcast of something that we think would be helpful if we can identify what that is.
Yeah. Anything to add, Paul?
No, I think Jerry covered it very well.
Yeah, you want to defend the 5 or 6 roundabouts in Mount Horeb?
You know, I've heard about them. I haven't driven those, actually, to be honest. And I think, you know, many times too, local communities will do things as well to feeling that this is the right opportunity as well. So sometimes, we may have state projects or local projects, and that might be the case too as well. You know, in some communities.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Tim in Walworth. Hello, Tim.
Hi. I love the roundabouts. The the life savings with where I live are phenomenal. I mean, people aren't having these major crashes and calling out the sheriffs from all over to take care of the business. But the problem I'm seeing is that people who are coming to the roundabout, and if they're on the main county road, they feel they can keep their speed up and sneak through there even though someone's in the roundabout. And my understanding is whoever's in the roundabout has the right-of-way. Is that correct or not correct?
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. And that kind of ties into we're seeing more aggressive drivers, and once they get used to the roundabout, that they're entering with lack of regard sometimes to the motorists within the roundabout, and they're bolting through aggressively without yielding properly to that motorist that's within the roundabout. Things that we need to probably continue here is to educate, to remind people of the yielding situation, to make sure they're mindful of yielding prior to entering a roundabout, and keep that message going. And enforcement also helps out as well in those cases. If they have a situation where we see a pattern happening, that there might be an opportunity that extra enforcement could be there to certainly try to thwart some of that activity going on. So those things are definitely happening at times. I know we're going to try to look at things like Jerry mentioned in a future study. That might be some of the things of the driver behavior types of aspects that we'll learn more as well, as because we have a lot of roundabouts there. We're seeing how people are driving, and we'll know more about the human behavior side of things. We've got the engineering end of things kind of well underway, but we're learning more about the human behavior things with roundabouts.
So Lily on Facebook says they are okay. There are a couple of dumb designed ones in my area. The double lane roundabouts are terrible. Almost got hit twice in 10 seconds by a full-size van not yielding when he was blocking the view of the car on the other side of him who decided to pull out without looking. That one scares me. So without maybe going into particulars on that one, are we going to have more double laned ones or multiple laned ones or single laned ones? So what goes into that, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, the multi-laners are determined based on numbers of vehicles coming in and entering, departing the roundabout. So, yeah, I mean, right now we have about, I would say, a little bit more than half of the roundabouts being built statewide are multi-lane roundabouts. And again, they're driven by the capacity needs. There's more attention to detail, certainly, when a motorist comes to a roundabout that's multi-lane, because there's two lanes in the central island, there's two lanes entering, give or take, and that's kind of the message there. It just takes more being more mindful of what's there, more activity versus what a single lane is, because again, that's just one lane circling the roundabout, and that's a bigger difference between the two.
So,
and
might there be any changes in design or placement or improvements when it comes to roundabouts in the future, Paul?
Well, I mean, we'll go back to the ICE report, the evaluation of where roundabouts are located. We are very mindful on trying to place roundabouts if we think it's the right control and being certain that this is the right spot for it and it's the right improvement to improve the safety and operations of it. So I think that's certainly, it's not a silver bullet everywhere. We don't put roundabouts, along signal lights that have progression to keep green progression for motorists. So there's places that roundabouts just aren't a good location. But it's certainly that there are places that would be more
appropriate.
And Jerry, any other thoughts on the future of roundabouts in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just quickly add to what Paul was saying. We certainly recognize that it is taking drivers a while to get accustomed to roundabouts, and we are concerned with that too. So we are trying to move forward at a moderate pace. For example, we've introduced some triple laners in the state and recognize the complexities with that. And you've mentioned roundabouts in close proximity, the complexities with that. We are paying conscious attention to not making things overly complicated for our drivers, and we'll be looking to move them in, you know, we think is what is a good measured pace.
Well, you know, we have so many comments on this. I think I'm just going to take a couple of calls a bit as we have a minute or so to go. Joe and Abrams. Hi, Joe.
Hi. How's it going there, Joy?
Good, Joe, but go ahead with your comment because we're almost out of time.
Yeah, sorry about that. When did they come up with the idea, the signs that say that you're approaching the roundabout, they added a dot eventually, which really made a lot of sense, and it really helped out on the roundabouts that I've noticed.
What, a dot on the sign made a big difference?
It made a world of difference, and it was just like, okay, a little light bulb popped in somebody's head and said, we'll add this one little dot. And it made a world of difference for everybody that I've.
I guess I didn't notice. Jerry, did that make a world of difference?
Well, it does for some people. I mean, we had a little bit of a mixed reaction to that, but there were unfortunately some people that would make an immediate left, you know, right at the entrance to the roundabout and actually turn into traffic. So putting the dot in there gave people the idea that even if you're going left, you have to go around the circle.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Jerry Zog and Paul Vraney, both with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Thanks to Brianne Chasso for producing this program and direction. And thanks to Elizabeth Deliquest for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We're going to talk about the youth vote on the campaign trail coming up next. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.